In preparation for this session, we, Corinne, you and I have been hanging out with some really incredible young women, and we felt that, you know, especially in this area of compassion, like Lisa and I have really felt God speaking to us really loudly about this, and that's, you know, hence the journals we gave you last night in this session specifically. So Corinne and I, actually, I don't know if you've ever hung out with Corinne. You kind of feel like you've been let into like the celebrity lair when you're with her. You know, like she's got that presence you never want to leave when you're there. So we want to invite some of the girls we've been hanging out with just to share their stories a little bit. You know, like Corinne said, you know, this is a, you know, it's the word of our testimony. You know, just their hearts, share their hearts. So what we found is that, you know, God's a little sneaky that way. Obviously, the word we had on our hearts ended up being on everyone's hearts. So at first, we thought we were really special, and then it's like God's just moving, you know. So how awesome is that? You kind of think, oh, I'm so special, I get this word. And then it's like, no, everyone's got it, because that's what God's doing, which is awesome. So you're a little bummed in the beginning, and then you're like, it's good, all right. So the first person I want to ask to join us is Rebecca. So come join us on the stage. Come have a seat here with me on my couch. Very big one. I'm actually going to take my shoes off. That's all right by you. I can't stand in them anymore. I've been in them since 5 o'clock. Rebecca, so you are a full-time student, and you are a volunteer at STOP with Corinne and the team. So tell us a little bit about what you do.
Basically, what we do is go into the high schools and primary schools in the area, in and around Stellenbosch, and sometimes it's a Cape Town. And then we basically give these campaigns about human trafficking and teach the kids what it's about. But we actually start off with like coming in as if we're idols or some cool company. And then we fool them and we say, we need some volunteers this weekend. We're going to Joburg or we're going somewhere. Who's willing? And they always come up and then we tie their hands and then we're like, okay, you've just been tricked and this is how it happens. And then, yeah, basically we just teach them the reality of human trafficking. And then we explain who we are and we teach them and we empower them to make changes in their community and to be aware. And these kids really, yes, they, if this actually had happened in Clutersville the other day, and these Nigerian guys, I think, stopped by one of the kids and said, no, come in the car. And this child was like, I'm not for sale. I'm not going. Praise the Lord.
That's awesome. So this is what's kind of baffling me a little bit, right? Because I was a student a long time ago, but I can't remember having time for any of this. But you and I are going to chat about this a little bit later as well. But what, I mean, because when I was a student, the only thing, right, this is before I got saved, the only thing I was interested in was getting drunk and hanging out with guys. So where did this start for you? Like, was there a moment? Have you always been involved? Like, how did it happen?
The spark. Well, basically, when I was actually 16, I heard for the first time about human trafficking, and I was still at Rhenish and in high school and whatever, and we were at this leadership camp, and there were all these young people there, leaders of Cape Town and in their schools and whatever, and I had just this vision to go and teach in schools, and I was like, why don't we just use, I don't know, our drama department or something and teach kids what's actually happening so they know, they can be aware of it. And when I told the other people this, they like laughed at me and like, no, that's not going to happen. I was like, oh my gosh, my dream is just completely ruined. But oh well, at that same time, actually, God not only put it on my heart, but also on Tanya Karen's heart. And that's when actually STOP began. But I didn't know about this until I came to university and then heard about STOP. And then this was last year, I was in first year, and then I said, okay, I want to get involved with this. I wasn't very involved, but the spark thing really that hit it for me was like, actually, when a guy actually approached me and with the tricking me to actually be trafficked for the music industry and whatnot, and I didn't have my guard on, my spiritual, you know, my armor of God on, and it was actually that, then I had some dreams about actually what was really going on in the spirit here, and I saw this guy also taking another girl and doing the same thing with her, and it was the same talk and whatever, but I had in this dream, and I spoke to this girl, and, you know, asked her, just was convicted to ask her, what is this guy telling you? He's telling, whatever he's telling you is lies and whatnot. Turns out she was actually also being, tricked by this guy, so it was, that's, actually, yeah, that was the trigger moment where I was like, I've got to do something about this. This guy's doing stuff in the darkness, and it needs to come to light. if this is happening, if this can happen to me in Stellenbosch, like how many other people is this happening to? And they don't know and they're blind from it. So, and then also the movie Taken came out and I was like, okay, well, this is just confirmation. And this year I just decided, this is it. I'm not going to live in fear anymore. And I'm going to just get on board with what really God's doing. I'm sick of having coffees with endless rubbish discussions about, oh, this guy and that guy and your focus all on, you know, I don't know, social stuff. And I was like, you know, I actually want to get my focus on what the Lord has put on my heart.
Good. Karen. So you guys, STOP isn't, I mean, you work with a lot of volunteers, right? You have a lot of people who just, like Rebecca, her heart was stirred and she joined into what you guys do. So, like, ratio of paid, like, employees, STOP employees, to people who just volunteer, how would you rate that? Like, how many?
Well, at this stage, we're all volunteers. My husband is providing STOP. But, you know, we're at a stage now where everybody on board is volunteering. Mm-hmm. We'll probably be having to move into something new later. Yeah. But the Safe House has got complete staff. We've got a manager. We've got a social worker on board. And we've got funding. And it's a strong NPO that's running. STOP has just hadn't had time to really start. We're doing what our hands find to do because it was such an urgency. And but the Safe House has 5 full-time staff and proper funding in place and running with paid people.
Okay.
But STOP, all volunteers.
So tell us a little bit about the Safe House. Where is it and exactly how does it function and what does it do?
Okay. We can't tell you where the Safe House is.
Yeah, well, then it wouldn't be safe. Right?
Because it has to be a safe place.
I tried to color my hair before the conference, so I won't ask blonde questions, but it just clearly didn't help.
When the Safe House was just a place for abused women and children, I mean, there was no problem. But at the moment, if you ask me personally, I'll tell you if you want to get on board and get involved. But it is somewhere in the vicinity. And, you know, this is the most lucrative crime in the face of the earth at the moment. It is the money spinning in the crime world it's gone past guns and drugs. The girls that are being trafficked and vulnerable people, the money that is being made out of it is so dangerous. The fact that we're running a tight ship here, and we're thanking God for His goodness where there's no fear involved, but we protect the girls.
Okay, and then just on just on the reach of STOP at the moment, is it only South Africa focused? Sort of, what's your goal with it over the next 5 years? Do you have plans to move, you know, totally global? Are you partnering with global companies? I know we've chatted a little bit about where you're going with that. Yes. If you can just share with the ladies.
Well, I think South Africa's developed a product, Marinette, and I'm thinking of Justine, and there's an amazing team of people developing a product which is actually internationally, we're spearheading. We've got material together for 2010 and afterwards for schools. You know, the most amazing thing that's happened is that that South Africa's Department of Education has come on board, and from next year, the Standard 10 curriculum is going to have a module on human trafficking, national.
Amazing! It's amazing. It's huge.
This is so profound. So what I'd like to say in that is that we've got a product here. Errol Naidoo was also involved with this because he has a ministry care, I think it's called Care. That's right. And there's a care pack that we developed in collaboration with him. And he's busy spreading the word all over. But this is international stuff. And Justine and them are working through this material at the moment to make it a global friendly.
Yeah.
To go to Cambodia and Thailand. But it's the most profound stuff. This PSA is one of the tools of many films and stuff which is happening internationally. So we in South Africa have got something which we can give the world at the moment.
That's amazing.
I'm so happy.
I love what Pastor Fred said earlier today as well, that we actually have the capacity and the potential to spearhead so many amazing projects, you know, and this is just proof of that, to see how that's happening. I mean, for you guys to get a module into the curriculum, I mean, how incredible is that? That's got God all over it. That's amazing.
I just want to respond to something that Rebecca said just now. Mm. I forgot that I wanted to mention it, but you know what happened last year? A girl that I knew, her mom is a friend of mine. She was looking for a job. You know, when you finished varsity and you can't find work, you're desperate, you're at the learning with you at the hospital, and she saw an advert in the Argus, I think, and it said, receptionist, 15,000 rand a month. You will be taught special massage techniques, need no experience. I mean, it was so easy there, straight. Being naive, being innocent, let's put it that side. Me, I think of this child all week and I think, where is she? How is she doing? Has she got a job yet? And I phone her and I say to her, how are you doing? But she's on voicemail. So I just said in a little voicemail, I'm missing you. Have you got a job yet? I've been thinking of you all week. How are you doing? And I get this SMS or voicemail back. She says, Tani, don't worry about me at all. She says, I'm on my way to the most amazing interview. She says, a receptionist at a beauty parlor, 15,000 rand a month, and they're going to teach me a special massage technique. When she said it, I knew it was the August. And it was a brothel, Zandali, and Excellence. That's the adverts. I knew it was. So I SMS the mom. I said, look, I'm very worried about your daughter. I don't know where she is. This and this and this and this. The mom says, no, she's so excited about this whole thing. She's happy that her daughter's going to get a job in Alice. And she says she Googled and she saw the name of the place is called Excellence. That's the brothel's name. I immediately phoned the mom. I said, your daughter's on your way to a brothel. Pray now. She got to that brothel. She looked in, you know, like a porch thing you look up, and these girls came and fetched her. They were provocatively dressed. She couldn't think that people in a massage parlor dress like that. And she went up. They were hugging her and kissing her and being abnormally friendly towards her. And when she got into the massage parlor, there was no seating. It was just doors going out of this place, you know, this beauty parlor. And the lady who received her just said to her, oh, you're such a beautiful brunette. We've only got blondes here and all this. And a client came in and they yanked her into the office and said, our clients prefer exclusivity here. Exclusivity. What? Exclusivität. Yeah. And then they let her go and they said to her, they're going to teach her a special massage technique and it's called pelvic massage. She was so innocent, girls, that she didn't even know what that meant. And she came out on the trip and she got all our voicemails. But before she got that, she said she's not going back there. She doesn't feel good about the situation. She was nearly trafficked, a Stellenbosch student, a friend of mine's daughter. So I want to say to you, it's very real. It's very close to home. I think we must come and do traffic-proof training in all your raises.
That's awesome. And so, Rebecca, you said when you were 16, all your friends thought you were crazy wanting to do this, but now you actually are doing it. Can you see that what you're doing is actually having an influence in your circle of friends? Obviously, it is, like in the schools, and you have a big effect there, but you know, like how are your friends experiencing it? Do you sometimes find it frustrating because you feel like you can't get the message across or you're on different like wavelengths about it?
Well, a lot of my friends actually don't think it's real. They don't think it really happens. Wow. So I'm constantly having to explain to them or tell them stories of it really happening. And there's like constantly a battle of following the norms of society and, I know, doing what everyone else does or standing out and doing what God has called you to do, because it won't go in line with what your friends say. So,
yeah.
So it is kind of that, but you've just got to be bold in doing it, because when you actually walk into your calling, you can't even imagine what great things will happen, where God will take you, actually. Like, it's when you realize, you know, it's not about you, but it's about what God's doing and what he's called you to do, everything will change, and I mean, your life will be abundant. It won't just be filled with, you know, stupid chats of endless days and endless coffees, and it's going to be filled. It's going to be, yeah.
That's awesome. So the next person I want to ask to join on our not-so-comfy lounge, I'm still trying to figure this out, is Taryn. So as Taryn comes up, can we just show the little clip? She actually is employed by Community Keepers, so we're just going to show you a little promo so you know what they're about.
What if he'd sided with the critics? believing that the only way to fight was with his fists. If he had listened to the masses, he would have given the world a faster horse. And if she had chosen to stand in the breadline, she would have never stood in front of millions of viewers. If he believed he was not going to amount to anything, mankind's understanding of the world's mathematical details wouldn't have amounted to much either. And if she'd listened to her body, she would never have broken records and stereotypes. Their choices defined them, shaped communities, and changed the world. Because choice is the start of change.
So, you have always, I know Taryn quite well, so you've always had a heart for compassion. I see you interact with people on the street, and, you know, like, I know your spirit and I know your heart, but where was that moment? You're involved with Community Keepers now. Was that always, like, a dream to be involved there? Was that your thing? How did your journey, tell us a little bit about your story, your journey.
Okay, when I think about my journey with Community Keepers, it was more of a choice. If I have to be really honest now, I love the black community. I taught in Cape Town for a while in the city, and I really love interacting with the black community. So when I started working in Ida's Valley, we're based in Ida's Valley, in Community Keepers, I really didn't have a heart for the community, and I was like, Lord, you really have to come through, because I will not be able to do this if I don't have a heart for the community. So being who I am, I took my car in the afternoons and I drove around in Ida's Valley. I took pictures, I interacted with the kids on the street, and it just didn't work. And I really say, okay, Lord, I tried. Like we always do, we try everything we can and then we go to the Lord. So I said to God, He really needs to give me a heart for this community now, otherwise I will not be able to do this. And it's amazing how God just came through. Now, when I'm with the kids, I have such a unconditional love for the community and the people of Ida's Valley. I was in at the Sportgronde by the Universiteitse Sportgronde. Kloekutsenberg, yeah. When they had the tear gas bomb thing, we had a sport into schools, and I wasn't on the stage at that, or at the pavilion at that moment when they threw it, and all the kids was on there. And when they threw it, I went into an overprotective mommy mode, and I ran up to the pavilion to go to the kids and to see if they're okay. And it's amazing how God just gave me the heart for that community. So it started off as a choice that I chose to work there, and the choice to live with compassion and to work in that community turned into an act of worship. And yeah, I can only give God the glory for it, because He gave me the love and the heart for that community. Yeah.
And so you're a teacher, so you obviously, you chose that direction because your heart was for that. But then, yeah, you know, I feel like it ties back to Corinne, what you were saying about the girl who was in prison, where, you know, you can't wait for the perfect moment, you know. And, you know, just on like a little bit of my story is my husband and I lived in New York for 6 years and had to move back last year. And it probably took me about a year to change my sucky attitude about being back, because my heart was so much for the community there that I chose not to interact here until God had to have, like, I had to have a moment where He was like, no, but, you know, and now my heart's, like, awakened for Stellenbosch and for the communities, and I'm biased about Community Keepers because I've helped out a little bit with a few things. And, you know, and I think, you know, part of the journey we're on is knowing that there's never going to be a perfect moment. You know, there are those moments, and they're great. When they happen, you know, that's going to keep you energized for years. But then, like, on a day-to-day level, you also have to make choices about your life and about how you choose, like, how you choose to apply your heart, basically, you know. Because there's, you know, we've been talking about the stirring and, you know, but then you actually have a choice to just act on it. And I think, you know, to me, your story with that is so inspiring to me. I mean, I know you helped me a lot, you know, because we're also good friends, you know, to get through that process. You know, the goal of the session really is also just to, for us all to see that, you know, we can all be a part of something. You know, because I know for me, especially, you know, when we moved back last year, I had to adapt to losing my dad, being back from New York, you know, finding my feet here. Like, I think 5 weeks after we sort of finally moved back, I had my, like, my second child. My first one was, like, 18 months old. We didn't quite plan it that well. So it was a little hectic in the beginning, all right, having 2 18 months apart. With my dad just passed away, with me, we just moved countries. Now we're back with the family after being away for 6 years. You know, but, you know, within that, I had to make a choice to actually just start looking beyond my own circumstances, you know. And so you guys deal with a lot of really hectic circumstances. I mean, we've been talking about some of the stories that the students have, and there's a lot happening there. And, you know, I know for me, there are times that I look at the world and I go, I just can't see how anything I can do can actually make a difference, right? So it's, I mean, it's just so crazy. Like, you know, how can I help? So what's your take on that?
I would like to just tell a quick story. We actually had a project, Milani was involved with that a while ago, a makeover project. We had this whole identity workshop, long story short, a journal project. In the end, one girl won a makeover, and it was amazing to see her story because she lost her mom at the age of, I think, 10, after being in hospital for 6 months. And she really had a very low self-esteem. And she won the makeover project. And she came into our office and she said, well, for the first time, I actually feel that I'm worth something and that I feel I'm actually special, and that this whole project opened a lot of doors in her life that was closed for a long time. And I told Milani this story, and she was so touched with it. So we knew we had to do more than just go to a house and buy a scarf. But working for an NGO, I'm not in a position to buy to organize a whole makeover for her. And so Milani suggested that we started this 24-hour fundraiser. We send out an email to all our friends and colleagues and people we knew to just give up one luxury this week and to pay it forward, to pay that money forward towards the makeover. And Milani gave up a latte. I gave up Woolworths fruit and nut mix and for peanuts and raisins. Love it. And then, so it was 20 Rand. We asked people to contribute 20 Rand, and the response was amazing. I'm going to say it now. It stays in this auditorium.
Between you, 550 people.
Doesn't go out of here because, I'm not allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it. We raised 2,900 Rand by just asking people to contribute 20 Rand. And the response of the volunteers was so amazing. I think that was the biggest part for me. And I would like to, Alexa Anthony, with a very stylish new haircut, she sent me an email saying she just wanted to thank us for the opportunity to, in a small way, contribute towards something big. Because we already forgot about that latte, and I forgot about bad that peanuts and raisins was. But a girl's life her life was changed forever. And just to see her confidence, I saw her a week ago when the schools opened, and just to see her walking on the school ground, you could just see the shift and the transformation in her life. And it's just that something small that makes a huge impact. And I'm almost done. The thing is, mercy, which for me is character, always a character of kindness and forgiveness, and that motivates and inspires compassion. And for me, compassion is not a huge, I'm going to be compassionate now. It's a character that you develop and build, and you actually choose to build that character of forgiveness and kindness. And that is not only in a community or at an NGO. It's in your family. It's in the body. It's a body that takes care of each other for the well-being of the body.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember that scripture I used? You are crowned with loving kindness and tender mercy. That is the crown we are wearing. So it is your inheritance. But by the way, we still need 50 tickets to be bought for the fashion show while they're advertising. Please. It's for trafficked women.
Love it. All right, so I'm going to ask another friend to join, Cornell. tell us a little bit about your story, about how you got to work with Brook Chorus, what inspired you, how did that come about?
Well, my background is occupational therapy, and so I was actually still working at St. Joseph's Home for Children, but my contract was almost over there, and they did give me an opportunity to stay, but I was praying because I knew there was coming a change in what I was going to do. And I actually went to Tane Elsa, who's the head administrator there at Brook Chorus, and she's been working there for 6 years. And the Lord is very faithful, because there wasn't a post for an OT. They weren't looking for anyone new. But I went there, and I told her that I'd really like to get involved in the community, possibly at the schools with the disabled children. And I draw up a proposal, and I told her, this is what I think that I can contribute, maybe in a small way. And there wasn't any funds. There wasn't a post, like I said. But anyway, it all worked out perfectly. And then I started there last year, June. And I started working with the disabled children. We started a creche for them, because we saw that the disabled children that were in normal creches didn't get the stimulation they needed, or any physical kind of therapy or anything. So we started with that, and then we also went to, well, that's what we still do now, we went to to individual clients at their homes. So we do home visits, people like with strokes or with TB in the lymph, or so they get referred from the clinics. So that's how I got involved. I just went to the Tanya and I said, I think I want to get involved. I don't know. There wasn't a big plan. It was just a very small step. So I just did that.
So it wasn't as if you were lying awake for nights, burning with a desire to work there?
No. I was just praying about it. But it was actually, I can just connect with what Doreen was saying. It wasn't as if I had a very huge heart for Xhosa speaking people. I actually, I was more comfortable working with colored people, Afrikaans speaking people. But the Lord is really faithful, and He knows where you're supposed to be going. And it's also, for me, it's what comes natural to you. For me, finances or engineering, it doesn't come natural to me. But working in a community, getting your hands dirty, getting full of spit, getting full of nappy stuff, it's probably good for me that I'm doing
get
that
exposed
now.
To it.
But no, I think it's just listening to that small, still voice in your head, yeah. And then going with it.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, it just reminds me, this has got nothing to do with compassion. In fact, this is the absolute opposite. But before we moved to New York, I worked in the fashion industry. And so when we moved to New York, God tricked me and made me volunteer for a church, because I was so desperate to work after being in corporate fashion for 5 years. We moved to New York. Only Peter, my husband, had a job, and with my visa, I couldn't work. So I was going crazy. I was like, I'm a workaholic. So I was in the office from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. every night. Like the first 2 years I was married, that was great for our marriage. And we didn't survive. That's good. But anyway, so I remember then long story short, that's a story for another day. Long story short, I ended up volunteering at this church we started going to in Manhattan. And I just said, listen, I'll come make you tea. I just need to do something, because I'll go crazy by myself. I'm driving myself and Peter crazy. Like, I can't do this. And then I started helping out to some events and stuff. And it was just, I'm not the church type, you know. Like, I just didn't fit the office very well. Like, I was, I'm a little bit in your face. So I wasn't I just didn't feel like I was a good Christian, you know. I'm like a little out there. And so we did a few events. And it was really hard for me, because I couldn't relate initially. And I remember that one day I had this huge meltdown, and I just couldn't do it anymore, because I just couldn't understand. For me, it's like, when you don't do your job, I'll fire your, can I say ass, yeah? Well, I just said it, so then I'll fire your ass, and that's the way I thought of it up to then. And I remember talking to our senior minister, and I was crying. I was like, oh, I can't do this. I can't work for the church. This place is a hellhole. And I said to him, I miss being creative. I miss designing stuff. I miss pretty things. I miss, we're sitting in your house. Like, I'm in your basement. It's not about you. I need to see pretty things. Like, I can't do this. And he helped me, and he said, you know what? It's not about what you're trained to do, like in your art or your skill. It's actually about like finding what your talents are, like knowing what your thing is, you know, and then applying that. For me, like the desire to make things pretty, I can make the stage look pretty. I can make a dinner plate look pretty, you know, but it's like actually knowing who you are, you know, and I think, you know, all your stories really have a little bit of that, getting to that place of like know who I am. And then again, like don't wait for the perfect match, but rather start moving first before you just sort of sit back and wait for it to come to you.
I want to add to that. It's not your ability, it's your availability. And that's something which I just see that God just is just looking for someone who's available. That's what I picked up here. And then your every gift and your ability start kicking in. But the availability is what he's looking for. And your availability here today, I mean, it's huge. We're 500 strong here. Just saying, Lord, I'm available. And where you move, he will do the work. And he will be glorified.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, and I think it's, again, it's what Taryn was saying as well. Like, we can all make a contribution, you know, as we figure out, you know, our time and our resources. We have to start somewhere, you know. I read this quote, which I can't remember exactly what it said, but it said something like, you have to start with the small things in order for big things to come to you. You know, and I think it's a little bit, you know, we're all a little bit like that. I find that we very much, like, I get into stages like that myself, where my world goes like this. You know, it's like, oh, now my child's sick. Now, you know, poor me, my dad passed away. Oh, now I'm, like, dealing with my mom. Like, and I go like this. I just kind of clamp in, you know, where the more I stepped out and I got involved, you know, just like doing stuff at the office at Shofar or helping Taryn at Community Keepers, I actually found healing for my, like, sad spirit, you know? And it actually helped me heal as I started giving to others, you know? And I think, Kunal, the other thing you and I were talking about is just that once you feel that stirring in your heart, that still little, like, that small voice, you know, what do you do? What do you do if up to now? Because, I mean, like, not all of you... Like, the reason also why we ask these girls is that they represent a whole variety of people. So we have Taryn, who also lived abroad, just came back. She's single, not for long, in Jesus' name. Working girl. And then we have Corinne, who's got, like, all this wealth of experience. But she actually raised a super, like, healthy family, beautiful family, while she was doing all of this. You've got me. I'm a little crazy. I've got kids, but it's all good. Then you've got Cornell. She's married. You got the sequence right before you got pregnant. That's awesome. And then we have Rebecca, who's a student, and she volunteers. You know, so basically, you know, like, there's people from all walks of life. What do you do if you're sitting in the audience and you feel like a stirring in your heart?
Well, I think as... Tani Corin said, I think it starts with prayer, communicating it to God, because he's ultimately, he knows the plan that he has for you. And then I think it's, for me, it's important to be part of a local body, of a church, because I really believe that God is coming back, not for the individual, but he's coming back for the body, for the church. And if you can find what you're good at, or you don't necessarily have to be good at, but at least what you like, I think start there with what you like and what comes natural to you. And then I think a practical tip is to go and visit the different organizations or the soup kitchens or in your church to see what is available, and to take a friend with you. And then go from there and see what you like. You might not like children, you might not like disabled people or not feel comfortable with them. But there is a part that you can play.
It's so interesting that we're busy making flowers now for Stefano's robes for 2 weeks from now. I mean, he's got this vision of these trains and these flowers. And, you know, the most amazing thing is that woman just came on board and came and sat around the table in my room at Le Brie and just started sewing these roses. And as we sew the roses, I mean, I don't even know some of them. They just came in. This friend brought that one. Out of this, the most amazing conversations developed and testimonies came forth and hope was released. So it's so precious. You know, it's not big stuff always. It's just thinking, okay, I can use a needle. Okay, I love cooking. Let's have some people to supper. So, yeah.
Also, it's a mind shift of, in our society, we think so individualistically and actually selfishly, and you can't really do anything on your own. You can't just go and conquer the world on your own. You actually need to fit into an umbrella, like a covering, where there's prayer and there's people that's got your back and that's holding you accountable. So, I mean, because I kind of thought, okay, I can just take on the world by myself.
She was going for gold. She was her horse. Was going far ahead
like,
of ours.
Far ahead there. And then I was like, and these women are so graceful. They're like, no, just, you know. And I just submitted under there, like covering and that. And wow, God will do more powerful things than you imagined when you work as a team than if you work individualistically.
That's awesome. Right, ladies, that is all that we have time for today. Thank you so much. Thank you, Taryn and Corin, Cornell and Rebecca. You guys are really absolutely amazing.